You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB, this is Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Don Guerra. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, August 30th, 2016.
But in any case, we're not against developing that. We want to at least work with the developer to make something compatible that keeps the feel of the community we have. But the developer in this case does not want to work with us whatsoever.
The town of Ellettsville is being sued for blocking apartment development on the west side of town. That story and what it says about the difference between Bloomington and Ellettsville later in the program.
Also coming up in the next half hour, the ins and outs of money, our weekly segment providing economic education and community resources that keep your budget balanced and your finances flourishing. But first, these local headlines.
A new investigative report from the Indianapolis Star has revealed that the state of Indiana has spent millions of dollars on tax incentives for companies that offshored more jobs than they created. The paper examined 10 companies who received incentives from the Indiana Economic Development Corporation to bring new jobs to Indiana and found that all 10 companies laid off more Hoosiers than they hired. The incentive agreements required those 10 companies to create just over 1,000 jobs, but they actually laid off over 3,800 workers. The largest single job loss came from Carrier, who announced earlier this year that they would be laying off 2,100 workers in Indianapolis and moving production to Mexico. In some cases, the state awarded money to companies even after they moved jobs out of the country. Pendiform, a plastic molding company, sent 37 jobs to Mexico and received $160,000 in tax credits to retain employees in a Bedford plant. Companies were able to get away with net job losses in Indiana because most of the IEDC's incentive contracts were drawn up on a per-facility basis. Vera Bradley received $1.7 million to add employees to their Fort Wayne facility, but closed another facility in New Haven and laid off 250 workers. That's twice as many workers as they promised to add in Fort Wayne. Offering economic incentives to companies is common practice for state governments around the nation. But other states have been more willing to attach statewide job retention requirements to those contracts. In total, the state of Indiana has approved $24 million in incentives since 2013 to the 10 companies covered in the Indianapolis Star report. But those companies were responsible for a statewide loss of 2,800 jobs in that same period. The list of companies who received IEDC money and experienced a net job loss in Indiana include General Motors, General Electric, auto parts manufacturer Federal Mogul, and Carter Fuel Systems.
The Indiana State Department of Health reports the infant mortality rate amongst the state's black population is twice that of the overall state average. According to an article from Indiana Public Media, 14.7 babies per every 1,000 born to black families died before their first birthday in 2014. Indiana's total infant mortality rate was reported as half that, a little over 7 per every 1,000 births. In addition to the high rate of infant mortality, black families are experiencing a rise in sudden unexpected infant death syndrome. The syndrome includes situations in which an infant dies unexpectedly, being most often attributed to unsafe sleeping conditions. 2014 saw 240 black babies per every 100,000 die from the syndrome, a 60% increase from 2013. Studies cited by the Indiana State Department of Health indicated that such practices by parents are markedly higher amongst both black and working class parents. In light of the data, the department has identified the problem as one of its highest priorities and is currently reviewing applications for its newly created Safety Pin effort, which set apart $11 million in grant money to fight infant mortality. In order to prevent sudden unexpected infant death syndrome, the Indiana Perinatal Network advises new parents to always put a baby to rest on its back and avoid soft sleeping materials such as pillows, blankets, stuffed animals, and bumper pads.
City Parks officials are moving swiftly to give Wapahani Mountain Bike Park a bit of cosmetic surgery. As part of the I-69 construction, the state purchased a 3-acre strip of land along the bike park's western edge. Natural Resources Manager Steve Cotter says the westernmost segments of bike trail that loop around the lake were lost when the land was purchased by the state. Cotter says a new project will replace the western edge of the bike trail, including a boardwalk that's no longer usable.
The new plans call for a raised causeway trail at the very western edge of the lake. It'll be slightly raised, higher than the lake level, and it makes sense, we think, to have a permanent earthen structure there instead of a boardwalk or something that would require maintenance down the road. The causeway section will be about 225 feet, and it will connect the trails on the south side of the lake with the trail on the north side of the lake. It's a short distance, but it's a critical one because it's the only way that people will be able to get across the lake, basically.
Time is of the essence, though, Cotter says. He anticipates that I-69 construction right-of-way fence will be in place by the end of October. A fence would block access to the construction site of the new trail segment.
Currently, the only way to get to the west side of the park is on a trail that's 3 feet wide. So they would have to remove trees and put in a temporary road to take the heavy equipment necessary to get the materials over there.
Cotter received approval last week from the Board of Parks Commissioners to expedite the bid and procurement award authority. Now all he needs is a contractor. Costs of the project will be reimbursed by the Indiana Department of Transportation because it is a result of I-69 construction. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Don Guerra.
And I'm Sarah Vaughn. Earlier this month, WFHB reported on a lawsuit filed by a developer against the Ellettsville Plan Commission. Today, correspondent Jared Dill brings the in-depth story behind the lawsuit and what it says about the differences between Bloomington and Ellettsville.
Most people who call Bloomington home are familiar with the regular pattern of development. A developer submits a plan to build a new apartment building, the surrounding residents come out and complain, a few token changes are made to the design, and in the end, the developer gets their way. More apartments are built, usually aimed at students, and the neighbors go on with their lives. But right up the road from Bloomington, a very different story is playing out. A developer is suing the Ellettsville Plan Commission for putting the brakes on an apartment complex they want to build on the western outskirts of the town. The complex borders Litton Estates, a recently built subdivision of single-family homes. The developer, Ellettsville-based Quality Realty and Development, wants to build a high-density complex of around 70 units, a number that was slightly reduced in a later plan. After months of plan commission meetings and several revisions to the design, the commission shut down the project. Almost immediately, the developer responded by filing a lawsuit. Under Indiana law, developers can seek a judicial remedy if they feel that local authorities have treated them unfairly. We contacted Kevin Tolodi, director of planning for the city of Ellettsville. While he did not want to speak on the radio about the case, he did refer us to the official findings of the Plan Commission regarding the development. The commission declared the apartments to be incompatible with the surrounding housing based on the topography of the land, insufficient traffic access, and insufficient visual screening. However, the commission did acknowledge that the proposal satisfied the town's technical requirements under the town code. The developer called this decision arbitrary and capricious in their lawsuit. They say the Plan Commission used the landscape topography as an excuse to deny the development, even though the town code has no requirements regarding topography. The developer also accuses the Plan Commission of denying their project and then immediately discussing changes to the town code that would have retroactively justified that decision. though there was discussion of changes to the town code at the meeting where the project was denied, no actual changes were finalized. Around 24 residents of Lytton Estates turned out at the Plan Commission meetings to voice their concerns about the apartments. They're concerned about traffic, safety for their children, property values, and the visual impact of putting an apartment building on a hill overlooking the neighborhood. Andrew Zellhoff is a biology professor at IU and a resident of Lytton Estates. He's been following the project from the beginning and is happy with the Plan Commission's decision to deny the new apartment complex.
So what's really nice to see is that our Planning Commission is actually taking an active role. They're not just, for instance, why have a Planning Commission if all you need to do is make sure things meet some technical merits? You know, okay, fine, check boxes, then why even meet? I really much actually appreciate and got a better appreciation of the Planning Board Commission that they're looking at every, decision of on how it's going to impact Ellettsville and what Ellettsville themselves have come up and say they want Ellettsville to be. There was a, town survey, I think maybe just a year ago, that was taken, and clearly the overwhelming, opinion of that was we don't want to become like Bloomington. We like the small town feel. We like to maintain that. And so I think the Planning Commission, has within their power to, decide about density issues. How is it compatible with the surrounding issues, with the surrounding community? And I think our Planning Board is doing a very good job of that, actually, projecting why people came to Ellettsville in the first town or what they like about Ellettsville.
Zellhoff's experience with the Plan Commission highlights an important difference between Ellettsville and Bloomington. Compare the Lytton Estates situation to the approval process for Echo Park, an apartment complex on the south side of Bloomington that was started in 2015. Neighbors had many of the same concerns: visibility, traffic, property values. Several members of the Bloomington Plan Commission said they had no choice but to approve Echo Park because it met all of the city's technical requirements. They approved it even though they personally felt that the development did not fit the community. In a story we did last year about Echo Park, residents who lived next to the proposed location said the Bloomington Plan Commission basically told them tough luck. This is one of the residents who spoke with us for that story.
I think it's unfortunate because it was already zoned for multifamily housing, and as the Planning Commission was voting just, a little over a week ago, most of them stated at the end that they really don't think this is the right place for this project. This woods doesn't need a high-density apartment complex. However, it's already been zoned for it, and because the developers are meeting all of the codes, they didn't feel like there was anything they could do.
Many in Lytton Estates accuse the developer of ignoring their concerns and doing nothing to compromise. In the Echo Park case, several changes were made to the design to attempt to assuage residents' concerns about drainage and visibility. But Quality Realty and Development has so far done very little to modify the design, and what they have changed has mostly been in response to specific technical demands from the Plan Commission, such as adding emergency vehicle access. Andrew Zellhoff says many residents are okay with the land being developed, but the developer is unwilling to compromise on any aspects of the plan.
I said the developer did not take any opportunity to really work with us. You read the lawsuit, and it looks different. And he really didn't want to compromise whatsoever. We're not against that land being developed. We know that land is, rated commercial. That decision was made back in 2008 when there was probably only 5-6 homes in the community, so no one attended the Planning Board Commission that day to voice any concern about that. But in any case, we're not against developing that. We want to at least work with the developer to make something compatible that, keeps the feel of the community we have and strengthens the community we have. But the developer in this case does not want to work with us whatsoever.
Another angle to this story is the developer itself. The firm behind the Echo Park project, HM Mack, is an established presence in Bloomington with several apartment complexes already complete. Quality Realty and Development is a much smaller company run by Jill and Joe Smith. Jill Smith is a realtor who, up until now, has mostly dealt in single-family homes. Lytton Estates resident Nate Myers has real concerns about the Smiths' ability to build and operate a high-density apartment complex.
But the real issue is, through the course of this plan, I don't think the developers have done a great job in alleviating the concerns of the neighborhood specific to the economic viability of their endeavor. In fact, I think their responses, on the contrary, have only added to increase our fears. We've given them the opportunity to provide us with their market analysis, their break-even occupancy rates, et cetera. I think at the very least we want to know that they're thinking about these things and have a high level of assurance that their business will thrive and be a good neighbor to our area. And unfortunately, at every turn, I think their responses have created the perception that they just haven't really thought about that, and they don't have the bandwidth to make a serious go at this endeavor. And that's really my perception. I don't know that that's reality, but that's the perception.
Unless the city of Ellettsville decides to settle and compromise with the developer, the next step in the case will be the city's lawyers and the developer appearing before a judge to argue the case. So what accounts for the difference between this case and the development experience in Bloomington? Why was the Ellettsville Plan Commission willing to stop the developers when Bloomington residents with very similar concerns about the Echo Park development were ultimately told to accept it? The most obvious explanation is the ideological difference between the two cities. Ellettsville places a high value on their small town feel, a phrase that appears repeatedly in the town's growth plan. Myers and Zelhoff both stated that even though they work in Bloomington, they were drawn to living in Ellettsville because of the small town aesthetic. This is still a major selling point for the town. Additionally, Quality Realty and Development is a very small company without much experience in the apartment game. Developers in Bloomington tend to know the system. They know the technical requirements, they know the perspectives and ideologies of the City Council and the Plan Commission, and they know how to offer some modest compromises to get their plans approved. Lawsuits by developers against the city are relatively rare. Finally, there is an uncomfortable socioeconomic angle to the comparison between Echo Park and the Lytton Estates apartments. Lytton Estates is a very nice neighborhood. The first phase of construction included many custom-built homes, and the minimum price for houses in the neighborhood right now is around $220,000. The residents include IU professors, engineers, and other professionals. One resident brought academic papers to a plan commission meeting to demonstrate multifamily housing's effect on property values. By comparison, the neighborhood bordering Echo Park was older, with lower property values and more working-class residents. At the time of this story's airing, the town of Ellettsville has been served in the case and has chosen an attorney. No judge or court date has been assigned. We made several attempts to contact Quality Realty and Development for this story, but did not receive a response. For WFHB News, I'm Jared Dill.
You can hear that story and any of our daily local news feature reports online at WFHB.org.
Coming up next, WFHB's weekly financial segment, The Ins and Outs of Money.
It's The Ins and Outs of Money, presented by the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. Quick tips for getting control of your money, no matter how big or small your income or family is.
Hi, and welcome again to The Ins and Outs of Money. I'm Ryan Stacey with the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. And with Halloween this week, this may be the only time it's actually appropriate to talk about death without sounding too depressing. So here goes. Today I'm going to talk about the end-of-life planning process and how failing to make proper arrangements can have a big financial and emotional impact on loved ones who are left to handle the unfortunate task of a death in the family. And I'm not just talking about ensuring that an aging parent has their financial affairs in order. There's plenty a young, healthy person can do now to have the peace of mind that when their own time comes, the people around them can make arrangements without financial hardship. If you're like most people, the first thing that comes to mind when you hear end-of-life planning is a will, that legal document you draw up to designate who takes possession of your property and assets in the event of your death. It's not as straightforward a matter as you might think, though. Your will must meet certain legal requirements, which vary from state to state, in order to be executed to your specifications. Now, it's true that most states recognize immediate family members, like the spouse and natural children of the deceased, as the default beneficiaries of their estate. You always want the exact terms of your will to be written in accordance with the law, especially if there are parents, siblings, stepchildren, or other relatives in the picture. And you definitely want to be sure your will is clear about providing for any minor children or people with disabilities, as well as for excluding any family member for any reason. One option for creating a will that's been gaining in popularity is the do-it-yourself will. Wills that you create yourself online or with the help of an instruction manual to save the expense of hiring a lawyer to do it for you. While it's true that many of these tools are legitimate and will hold up legally, no website or book can provide a one-size-fits-all will that takes into account everyone's situation and all the most current laws in every state. So if you do go this route, many experts encourage hiring a local attorney to look over your final document to confirm that it can be executed legally and according to your wishes. This step can save your heirs an unnecessary delay, and the consultation will still cost only a fraction of having a lawyer draw up your will from scratch. One of the most important things a will does is designate an executor. That's the person you choose as a personal representative for your estate. Your executor will be responsible for distributing your estate to your beneficiaries, paying your creditors, and filing your taxes, among other things. You want to be sure you've selected someone you trust to act as executor of your will, because that person will be carrying out your final wishes for your financial affairs. But there are other representatives besides the executor of your will you'll need to think about, too, earlier in the end-of-life process. In the event that you can't make decisions for yourself before your death, like a coma or dementia, people you appoint your powers of attorney will be able to make them for you. There are different types of powers of attorney. You can have a power of attorney for your legal matters, for your financial matters, and for your medical matters, and they can all be different people or the same person. As with the executor of your will, think carefully about who you'd like to appoint as your powers of attorney, and be sure they understand and consent to that responsibility. One thing many of us don't think about that can complicate your end-of-life affairs is how much of our important personal business is conducted online. If your attorney, executor, or power of attorney needs access to important records kept online, their failure to access them can hamper their ability to inform companies you do business with and government agencies that you've passed away. That could cause a delay in your estate being settled and could even be expensive. Be sure to keep a list of current login information and passwords in a safe place, whether it's in a secure place on the cloud or on a flash drive in a fireproof safe, so that people you trust can access them if they need to. Nobody likes to think about planning for the end of their own life or that of someone they love, but according to Ben Franklin, along with taxes, death is inevitable, so it's important to make sound financial decisions before the strain of illness and grieving compromises our ability to make the best choices we can. Talking to your family about the end-of-life planning process ensures that you get your affairs in order the money smart way.
The Ins and Outs of Money is part of the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. It's produced by Ryan Stacey at Level Up, the Digital Creativity Center at the library. Executive producers Joe Crawford and Dan Witherid is our sound editor. Music courtesy of Flannel Graph Records. Tools for taking control of your money can be found at money.mcpl.info. That's money.mcpl, as in Monroe County Public Library.info.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Jared Dill and Joshua Fleck, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Jared Dill.
The Ins and Outs of Money is produced by Ryan Stacey and associate producer Christina Wiltsy. It's part of the It's Your Money project at Monroe County Public Library. Our engineer is Jennifer Brooks. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as all other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org.
and you can be part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
Stay tuned for Interchange, Bloomington Community Radio's longest-running public affairs program, coming up next on WFHB.